We only perceive it due to our contaminated senses. We start misidentifying with things. For example, we misidentify with this body and we think we are this body. That is the mind, the senses, and the body. And then also we start finding happiness where it doesn't exist. Just like a man who lost his needle in the haystack. There was a farmer who lost his needle in the haystack, but he was looking for it in the street, under the street light. So this is another gentleman who was walking past. He asked the farmer, because the farmer was looking worried and he was walking up and down trying to look for this needle. So this gentleman who was walking past, he asked him what it is that he was looking for. He said, I'm looking for my needle. So the gentleman said, okay, I will help you find your needle. Where exactly did you drop it? He said, no, I dropped it over there in the haystack. So then he said to the farmer, why are you looking for it over here? Because it is not under the lamppost, it is not in the street, it is in the haystack. So then the farmer said, yes, I lost it in the haystack, but I'm looking for it over here. So this is how we have lost our happiness. We have lost our happiness, but we're looking for it in the material world, whereas it does not exist in the material world. And this Krishna has guaranteed. He has told us in Bhagavad Gita, he says very clearly to Arjuna that this place is temporary. It's a temporary place of suffering and misery. Dukkhalya ashashvatam. So this is what Maya does to us. It actually builds our mind to an extent that we are looking for happiness where it doesn't exist. And then identifying with this body. That is another big illusion. We think the body is the self. The body is us. Whereas the real self is the soul inside in this body, trapped inside the body. And then we are just busy with our senses trying to enjoy. You see, the soul is pleasure seeking by nature. Just as the intrinsic water, the value of intrinsic nature of water is wet, it will make you wet. The intrinsic nature of fire is to burn. It will burn you if you put your hand in the fire. You see? So similarly, the intrinsic nature of the soul is to seek pleasure, to seek happiness. And then, what do we do when we are, our consciousness is covered over by the illusory energy of the Lord? We try to find a happiness by enjoying our senses. So, from millions and millions of lifetimes, this conditioning has forced us to enjoy the senses. And we think that's where the pleasure lies. When senses become satisfied, we feel happy. So, how strong can the senses be? Once there were two friends. One was a fisherwoman and another was a flower woman. And they used to both come to the market to sell their products. The fisherwoman would bring fish to sell and the flower woman would bring beautiful aromatic flowers from the wild, and they would both come to the market to sell them. So then one day they both planned to spend some time together. So the flower woman invited the fisherwoman to her house. She said, why don't you come over to stay over for the night? And they spent some time together, and then it was time to go to bed. So the fisherwoman was given a place to rest in the flower woman's house. And she was taking rest. And then the next morning, the flower woman asked her, did you get enough rest? Were you able to sleep well? And the fisherman said, no, not at all. The aroma of all the flowers around here, the beautiful aroma of the flowers here, sweet aroma, was getting into my nose. And it was very disturbing. I couldn't sleep. So she said, but then she said, I put the basket of my fish next to me. And then the smell of the fish came into my nostrils, and then I felt very satisfied. And then I was able to sleep. So you see, this is what has happened to us. We have stopped enjoying the things that we are supposed to enjoy. And we have developed attraction for objects, for things that we are meant to avoid. This is how deep the conditioning becomes, that we completely lose the ability to discriminate what is meant for enjoyment, what should be enjoyed, and what should be avoided. So that's why Srila Prabhupada God says that a great hero is one who is able to cut through the smoke of illusion created by the illusory energy of the Lord. That is a hero. And Dhruv Maharaj here is no doubt, he's a great hero. Look what a great, incredible desire he had. I mean, to imagine that a five-year-old could conceive, after being insulted, to conceive to have such an incredible desire to demand a kingdom greater than his great-grandfather Brahma. It's an inconceivable desire to have. But then, look at the greatness of this boy, that he has such strong faith and determination that at such a tender young age of 5 years, he was determined to go to the forest. That shows his level of surrender. How surrender must he be? And he was so fortunate that his mother gave him the right direction. She told him, the sages and the saints find the Lord in the forest. That's where you will find God. And Dhruv Maharaj was so sure that God alone can satisfy his desire. So this was greatness, that he was, like Srila Prabhupada says, he was a soul completely surrendered to the Lord. That was his greatness. And then he was able to see the Lord face to face. To be able to see the Lord face to face in just 6 months. That was again an incredible achievement he had. And why was he able to do it? Because he performed austerities for the pleasure of the Lord. You see, he was so determined to get what he wanted. He had a material desire in the beginning, there is no doubt. But because he performed austerities and engaged in devotional service with a pure heart, he not only had his material desires fulfilled, but that in the end he actually realized how useless they were. You see, that's why Srila Prabhupada says that Krishna will fulfill your desires, and he will fulfill your material desires in such a way that you will desire them no longer, that you will no longer in the end have those desires. And how did he become cleansed of this material desire? See, Krishna promises, in Bhagavad Gita, he says, Tesam satta yukta nam vijayatam priti purakam dadati dadami buddhi yogatam yenam upyantite. To those who constantly engage in serving me with love, I give the understanding by which they can come to me. So initially, Dhruv Maharaj's desire was not to go back to Krishna. His desire was not to serve the Lord, to engage in the devotional service of the Lord. That is something he achieved after his austerities, because the Lord facilitated it. The Lord gave him the intelligence. So those who constantly engage in serving the Lord with love, he gives them the understanding to come to him. But in this case, Dhruv Maharaj did not want to go to the Lord initially. So then what does Krishna say? He says, Tesam vivanu kamartham aham adhyana jantama nasayam yana bhavasko gyan vipena bhasata. So to show them special mercy, I destroy with the shining lamp of knowledge the darkness born out of ignorance. So Dhruv Maharaj was initially, he had a bit of darkness in his heart. He had the material desire. But because he was engaged with a pure heart in the devotional service of the Lord, so then the Lord even destroyed that darkness. The Lord made him realize that the desire he has is so petty, it's so trivial. You know, it's just sense enjoyment which will come to an end one day. So such is the greatness of the Lord, that you surrender to the Lord and He actually gives you the best. He doesn't just give you your material desire. He helps you overcome that material desire, and He gives you better than the best. Such is the greatness of our sweet Lord. So then, Srila Prabhupada says, and Lord Chaitanya mentions that he actually inquires from Ramananda Roy, who is a great person? So then Ramananda Roy says, one who is a devotee of the Lord is great. You see, because in this material world, we have so many heroes. There are so many people who have made it big in this world. But they don't have the intelligence to understand that all their achievements are temporary. They're all going to come to an end. So, work towards a higher goal. It is very difficult for a common person with an average intelligence to understand that this is all futile. It's all temporary. Very difficult. That's why greatness lies in the ability. Real intelligence is to inquire towards the real purpose of life. What is the real purpose of life? It is above and beyond our material activities. So greatness. Radhanath Maharaj says that the greatness of a man lies in his ability to tolerate provoking situations. That is what makes a man great. You see, we may go about our daily activities, our daily duties on a normal day, in a normal manner, and that works fine. But whenever there are any issues or there are any situations which are slightly different from what we are expecting, that is when our real nature comes out. That is the real test of our advancement. How much can we tolerate this surprise, this sudden surprise that we are taken with? Suddenly something was working out fine and one day it doesn't work out. So what do we do? How do we deal or handle such a situation? So that's what Maharaj says. He says, it's your ability to tolerate provoking situation that shows how advanced you are. And in the scriptures, we have quite a few examples that actually show us how the devotees are able to tolerate provoking situations. For example, we have Ambarish Maharaj. Ambarish Maharaj was fasting for one whole year. One whole year he was fasting. And when it was time for him to break the fast, Durvasa Muni arrived. So, Durvasa Muni being his guest, he welcomed him appropriately and he offered to serve him prasadam. But Durvasa Muni said, no, not yet. I will first go take bath, freshen up in the river and then I will come back. And then Durvasa Muni didn't come back for a long time. And this side, time was passing for Ambarish Maharaj to break his fast. So then he consulted some sages, what should he do? Does he have to wait for Durvasa Muni or can he break his fast? Because if he breaks his fast, then it will be considered inappropriate. It would be considered a disrespect to his guest Durvasa Muni. Because you cannot eat before your guests. That's the Vedic etiquette. So then Ambarish Maharaj, being very humble soul, he didn't want to do that. He didn't want to transgress etiquette. So he consulted the sages. But then at the same time, the sages advised that you must break your fast within this time. So they suggested that if you only take a few drops of water, that will be considered that you have broken your fast, but then at the same time, you have not broken your fast because you haven't had anything. So you haven't eaten anything and it doesn't cause any disrespect to your guest. So Ambarish Maharaj followed their instructions. And then Durvasa Muni comes back after taking a bath in the river, and then because he was a yogi, so with his yogi powers, he could actually see that Ambarish Maharaj has already had water. And he got furious at Ambarish Maharaj. He was really furious at him. But then Ambarish Maharaj did not retaliate at all. You know, he even produced a demon to kill Ambarish Maharaj. But what happened after that was that the Lord Chakra came to protect his devotee. You see, Durvasa Muni was under great misunderstanding that Ambarish Maharaj, he's just a grihastha. You know, what is his potency? What is his advancement? He's just a grihastha. But the Lord Chakra himself came to protect Ambarish Maharaj. And Durvasa Muni was becoming scorched with the heat of the chakra as the chakra was following him in within the oceans, up in the sky, in the clouds. He even went up to Lord Brahma to ask for help. He went up to Lord Shiva to ask for help. But they both said, oh, we are sorry, this belongs to Lord Vishnu. You please go ask him for help. And finally he managed to reach Lord Vishnu. And what did he say? He said, you will have to go and beg forgiveness from Ambarish Maharaj. You have to ask for forgiveness from the devotee, from him. You offended him. So when he went and asked forgiveness from Amrish Maharaj was not at all upset at all. And he was so humble, he actually felt that Durvasa Muni is a much advanced soul than him. He did not for a moment feel that, oh, look, you have to eventually come back to me, look at you. No, not. This is humility. This is humility. So this humility is what makes us great. This is what is the test of your greatness. He actually wasn't at all feeling that this was a test of who is better and that he has now been proven to be better than Durvasa Muni. He was still extremely humble and he was still very nicely serving Durvasa Muni. So such is the greatness of these souls that they have so much humility and tolerance in them. You know, and this comes with advancement in spiritual life. This comes with intense devotion to the Lord. And then also Maharaj Parikshit. Maharaj Parikshit was hunting in the forest. He was with some of his kinsmen, his ministers. He was accompanied by his kinsmen. But on the way in the forest, they all lost him and he lost them. He got lost. And then he was very hungry and thirsty and very tired. So he was desperately looking for some place where he could get some water to drink. And then suddenly he comes across this hut and he has some hope. So when he goes inside, he sees a sage. He's sitting in deep meditation, in trance. So he requests the sage to give him some water. But because the sage is in meditation, the sage didn't respond. He didn't respond. He was deep in trance. So in his bewilderment, Maharaj Parikshit picked up a dead snake and put around the neck of the sage. Now this great sage had a boy called Sringi, and he was playing with his friends at the bank of the river at that time. But this boy Sringi was not an ordinary boy. Srila Prabhupada mentions he had Brahma Tejas. He was the son of a great sage. And so with his mystic powers he could see from when he was playing with his friends that this king has put a dead snake around my father's neck, and that made him very upset. He was thinking, how can somebody walk in and demand respect and then insult my father like this? So he got upset. So in a moment he took some water in his hand, he chanted some mantras and he cursed Maharaj Parikshit. Maharaj Parikshit was the king of the whole world. He was ruling the whole earth at that time. And this 7-year-old boy, Sringi, he curses Maharaj Parikshit to die of a bite from a snake birth within 7 days. Now for a insignificant fault, even if Maharaj Parikshit, he put a snake around the father's neck. This was a very serious curse to get. This was not even, you know, appropriate to maybe a mistake that he had made, but it was too severe a punishment for what he did. But did Maharaj Parikshit retaliate in any way? No. He was the king of the whole world at that time. But because he was a pure devotee of the Lord, not for a moment did he become upset, or he became sad, or was he afraid of death. Not for a moment. On the contrary, what did he do? He accepted this as his fate. He accepted this as his destiny. And he went on the bank of River Yamuna to fast for those last 7 days. So then what happens when such a pure devotee is in such a situation? All the saints and sages of the whole world came to him. They all came to him because they were all very sad and disappointed as to what had happened. And then that was the time when Srimad Bhagavatam was spoken. So now, and then for 7 days, Parikshit Maharaj did not eat or drink anything. He did not get up. He just heard Srimad Bhagavatam from Sukadeva Goswami. So this actually shows that Maharaj Parikshit was not the kind who would have become bewildered by just one day's hunger or thirst. Because later on, for 7 days, he did not eat or drink anything. He was just sitting there and listening to Srimad Bhagavatam. So this was an arrangement of the Lord to facilitate the speaking of Srimad Bhagavatam by Sukadeva Goswami to Maharaj Parikshit. But then this also indicates how great Maharaj Parikshit is. So these great souls, they don't retaliate. They don't associate with their body because they don't associate with their position. They are not engaged at all with their externals. Maharaj Parikshit did not for a moment think that I am the king of the universe. And the son of the sage, the 7-year-old boy, had the audacity to curse me. No, not at all. There's not a trace or a tinge of any pride or disappointment in the heart. That is humility, and that is what makes one great. The Pandavas had to go through the same. They were pure devotees of the Lord, and they were the rightful heir to the throne of Hastinapur. But Duryodhan, he and his brothers, they caused such pain and suffering to the Pandavas, and touching, because if he was able to find them, then again 13 years of exile, this was the condition. So he gave them extreme trouble and suffering, but they did not become bewildered and they did not complain to Krishna, because the Lord was with them all the time. The Lord helped them out of his own, because he had to. He was the friend, he was Arjuna's friend. You know, and Draupadi was such a great devotee of the Lord, all the Pandavas. Then what had happened was, in the end, when they, for 13 years they lived in the forest, and they went through so many difficulties in the forest. And then 1 year they lived incognito. And then when they came back, now it is the nature of the Kshatriya that, you know, they were administrators, they were rulers, they had to rule. So they made a proposal to Duryodhan that, you please give us at least 5 villages, because we are kings, we need to rule. So you give us 5 villages and you'll be happy just ruling those, you can have the whole kingdom. And Lord Krishna himself went there as a messenger, as a peace messenger for this proposal. But what did Duryodhan say? He said, not even that much land, which is equivalent to the tip of a needle. Not even that much land I will give to the Pandavas. He was so puffed up and so attached to the kingdom, to being the king, to being on the throne. So then, that's when, even then, the Pandavas were not ready to fight. But then, that's when Krishna said, now you fight. This is the time to fight. So this is your duty now. Because if you don't do this now, then you are failing your duty as Kshatriyas. So this is the greatness of the Pandavas, such immense level of patience and tolerance. They tolerated it. They were kings. They were living in palaces. But did they have any problem living in the forest? Did they complain about the heat and the cold and the discomfort? No. They could just do it as if they were used to it. As if they were so used to it. So this is what shows that the greatness lies in the humility, the greatness lies in the tolerance. And what is it? What is the opposite of humility? Pride. So that's why I just said, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has been quoted by Srila Prabhupada in a few verses before in the purports, and he also mentions, Trinadapi Sumichena Taro Rivasihishuna Amana Manadena Kirtanya Sadahari. More humble than a blade of grass, more tolerant than a tree, and in that state of consciousness can you chant the holy names of the Lord constantly. Then alone can we do that. So you see, we've all seen grass, it's a thin blade, thin one blade of grass. And when you step on the grass, see how it bends? It's standing upright, but then it quickly bends down, flat, 180 degrees. And then you move on again, you take your next step, it comes back up. But then again somebody steps, and then it goes back. But it doesn't complain. So this is the amount of patience and tolerance Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says we need to have if we want to be able to chant the holy names of the Lord constantly. And Taroriva Sahishnuna. Taror is a tree. Sahishnuna means tolerant. You have to become as tolerant as a tree. What does a tree do? It stands. It stands outside in the forest, in the cold. It tolerates the heat. It tolerates the cold. You see, in the winter, we see all the trees have lost their leaves now. They don't even have leaves on them. So people come and take the fruits. You see, if somebody comes and asks us to give them our salary or pay packet, can you do that? No, we worked very hard for it. You do look for that? No. But the tree gives. The tree, it takes, the seed comes, you know, and then it matures into a fruit. And then somebody comes and picks those fruits and walks off. The tree doesn't complain, you see. And then some people come, they come and they cut off the branches for firewood, they take away the branches. And the tree doesn't complain. And then it comes to a stage where it is even dying, but it doesn't ask for water. It doesn't ask for anything for itself. That is the amount of patience, tolerance and humility, Mahaprabhu says, we need to be able to chant the holy names of the Lord constantly. Otherwise, the mind, Krishna says, the mind is our best friend and worst enemy. It's up to us what we turn it into. So in the mind, it is up to us what we choose to fill. Pride is the opposite of humility. Anger and envy instead of patience and tolerance. So if the mind is full of anger and envy, it's not possible to chant the holy names of the Lord constantly. Because when you're trying to chant, these angry thoughts will come into your mind. You see? And sometimes there is no problem caused by anybody else. You see, if there is somebody who just walks in and you don't just like them for some reason, they haven't done anything to you, maybe they're very sincere and dedicated and they're very good at their service, and you just don't like that. It's just the envy in your heart. So there's nothing that has actually happened. Nobody has ever said anything to you. But the mind is disturbing you because the envy is sitting there. It is tormenting you. Your own mind becomes your worst enemy because envy, anger and pride are sitting there. Just imagine if there is a, you know, there are bins in the temple. Luckily these bins, they get cleaned every day. Rasa and so many other devotees, they are very kind. They just clean them every day. But just imagine if these bins were sitting there for a few days. How smelly would they get? It would be intolerable, such a strong stench. Very difficult to tolerate, you see. But then just think of our mind. Our mind is full of anarthas. Lust, anger, greed, envy, pride, illusion. They are sitting here from many, many lifetimes. And we haven't cleaned it. We haven't cleaned it. So just imagine how stinky it must be for the Lord. Just imagine how the Lord is tolerating, how much the Lord is tolerating all of us. You see? Because we haven't cleaned all these anarthas in our heart. They're so deep rooted. They come out every now and then. They're there. And then just imagine a mind which is which is very clean. Like a beautiful pond. Like a beautiful pond which has the swans of pure bhakti are floating around. And the lotuses of devotional service are sprouting everywhere. How beautiful would that feel? And how blissful we would be if we are at that stage. How blissful would that be, you know, if we can overcome all these anarthas that are tormenting us. It's actually nothing outside. There's not much outside really that bothers us. It's all within. It is all within us. And fortunately for us, the Lord says, there is a way that we can actually get rid of these anarthas. He promises to help us. So then, to cultivate this level of humility, so Shastras give advice. It is said that whenever you are doing praise, we tend to become proud. We tend to think, oh, we've done a great job. We are good at it. We have this skill. We have this ability. So we must pass on the credit to our seniors, to our guru, to those who have guided us and who have helped us with this gift. You see? And also we must remember that Lord Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita that I am the ability man. He says, I give you all the skills, So then what is the need to be proud of? What can he be proud of? It is the Lord himself who gives us the skill, the ability to do anything. He is the one who gives us the strength to do anything. You know, otherwise you wouldn't even be able to, you know, breathe. This breathing, this whole body, the way it functions, it's just happening automatically. We are not making any effort for the food just gets digested, you know, and the body, we are just breathing, the lungs are doing their job, the heart is doing its job. So who's doing it? The Lord has facilitated it in such a wonderful way. So what should we be proud of? We're actually doing nothing. So that's why the scriptures say that remember that whenever you ever get praise, it is for the Lord, it is for Guru and Krishna, because they are the ones who facilitated you. And then also we must consciously cultivate humility and consciously try to give up these anarthas from the heart. Srila Prabhupada often gives this example of how there was this marriage party and they had to cross the river, go on to the other side. So there were about a few men who got into the boat early in the morning. It was still dark, they couldn't see much. So they got into the boat and they started rowing. So when it was dawn and there was more light and they could see, they realized that they were where they started, they hadn't moved an inch. Because they didn't untie the ropes. The boat was still tied on the bank. So you got to untie the ropes, you know. You can keep chanting, but at the same time, if you're nurturing your anarthas, if you're nurturing and feeding your pride and anger and envy, you won't get too far. It's hard to get too far. So consciously work on your anarthas. If you ever see anger coming, if you see envy coming, you should check there itself. And the person it is coming for, you should serve them. Serve them so that you can have an amicable relationship with them, so that that ill feeling in your heart goes away for that person. So we have to consciously work on these anarthas, so that humility develops and patience develops. Excuse me. And then of course the Lord himself says that that if you get in devotional service, then I will purify you. He says, if you get in my devotional service, then I will take away all the anarthas in your heart. So all we have to do is engage in the Lord's service. That's exactly what Dhruva Maharaj did. He had such a grand desire, you know, such a big material desire. He didn't want the Lord. But then the Lord purified him. Because that, he says, I will do. He's kind enough. He says, you just engage in my devotional service and I will help you. I will take care of the rest. And then you also have to see that if we don't do things, if we don't consciously work on this, life is anyway working on us. You see, this material life is designed in such a way, it is a mechanism that has this built-in, agenda to make us humble, to humiliate us if you don't do it the right way. You know, the three modes of material nature are working, they're acting on us, they're competing to take control on us, and then we're forced to become humble if we rebelled. That almost our nose was touching the ground. So that is then these few young boys were passing by and they were giggling and said, "Oh, grandmother, what are you looking for? Have you lost something?" And she said, "You fools, I've lost the pearl of youth. I've lost the pearl of youth." And then, which one of us will not lose the pearl of youth? Nobody's guaranteed to stay young in this world. Old age is approaching fast. Krishna says, "Time I am, the destroyer of the worlds, in the form of Kala, in the form of time." He's taking away every day, slowly, slowly we are becoming reduced. We are becoming lesser and lesser. So everything breaks down with the influence of time, and so will our bodies, all the great memory, the beauty, the strength, the skills and the abilities that we are so proud of. They will all be taken away, slowly, slowly. They will all be reduced to nothing. That is humbling enough. That is humbling enough. And you see that working on us, how slowly we, you know, we grow up, and we, by the time we're not middle aged, you need to get your specs. You know, and then the eyes start giving problems, the body aches and pains. So it's a clear sign. It's happening to us. It's happening to all of us. So that should cause one to deeply think and reflect. Deeply think and reflect that this is not going to stay with us forever. So do it now. So sincerely engage in the service of the Lord now. So, and the Lord says, Lord actually says that Devihi Shagunamai Mamaya Duratyaya Mamaya Vipupadyante Maya Mittam Tarantite. That this divine energy of mine is very difficult to overcome, but those who surrender unto me can easily cross beyond it. So for devotees, there is still hope. You see, for a non-devotee, death is, it's terrible. Death means an end to everything. But for a devotee, death means Krishna. That means going to Krishna. For us, there is hope. So, ultimately, it all comes to, like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, engage in devotional service of the Lord. And by doing so, He will not only take care, Lord Krishna, mind you, He not only protects our spiritual lives, He also protects us. He also protects us materially. And in the, you know, we have such compassionate souls in our scriptures, like Vasudeva Datta. He was so compassionate to the living entities. He said that, my dear Lord, let me take the sins of all the people in this world. Let me take their sins, so they can all be with you. They can all go back home, back to Godhead. And let me remain here, and I will endure the bad karma of their sins. That is compassion. This is the compassion and humility that the Lord expects us to have. That is why He says, spread the glories of the Holy Name. So we not only have to work on our own anarthas, we also have to spread the Holy Name of the Lord. Humility, patience, tolerance, and compassion. These are the main qualities that can help us progress in our spiritual life. But then at the same time, if you have them already, then you have to just chant the holy names of the Lord. The only thing that you can do is sincerely engage in devotional service. And the Lord promises that He will cleanse these unwanted things in our heart. So I'll stop here and see if there are any questions or comments. Thank you very much. Granth Raj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki.